You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go paper-tarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen.
Ben, today we've got a topic that that I know you're excited about.
I'm gassed,
You brought this topic to us. We talk about what we're going to do ahead of time. This is one that you were really fired up about, right?
Yep.
So what is it?
This is our look at the self-driving cars of CES, Consumer Electronics Show 2013.
Ah, you're killing me. We've talked about self-driving cars. Do you know that this makes the fourth podcast that we've had about self-driving cars since we began?
Yeah, but so much stuff is happening.
Now all the way back to the beginning. Do you know that one of our first 5 shows, I think it was the 4th show that we ever did, was about driverless cars?
Yeah, the possibility, and that was before the Google car.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we did, and way back in 2008, we did driverless cars, which, this is, again, 4th show ever, right?
Yeah.
And we were up to like 430-something or something like
that. Yeah,
we're way up there.
We're going.
And then in 2009, we did the Pikes Peak and the Robo Audi,
mm-hmm.
which we're probably going to mention that same vehicle here, I think.
Yep.
And then August of last year, we did the How Driverless Cars Will Work, but it was the Google car.
Yes, specifically the Google
car. Yes, specifically the Google car. Now, I'll be honest, as we've gone along here, I've kind of lost track. Are we still divided on this, or are we still together on this issue? Like, what do you think? Good idea, bad idea?
Oh, okay, yeah. So I don't think that we're going to find some sort of silver bullet. I don't think that we, the people of Earth or whatever, are ever going to be happy with driverless cars or find an infrastructure to support it. Now, what I mean by that is totally autonomous cars.
Okay.
I can see them working in limited areas such as an urban landscape, like maybe New York City, possibly D.C. or right. San Francisco. But I can't see them working in most of the United States just because we're so big.
Well, there's one specific vehicle that we're going to talk about later in the podcast that I think hits that right on target,
what
you're just mentioning. Like one specific situation, one specific area, one specific vehicle, I think it will all work out.
So, okay.
It's kind of interesting.
I'm excited. Then.
But so we talked about the Google car.
Yeah.
And now that's probably the most visible vehicle, right? The biggest newsmaker, I guess, of the whole bunch, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so they're still working on the vehicle, and I think they're out there driving around Nevada, which we've heard a lot about recently in the news. Ooh. That, they've got license to do this now. And
only 2 accidents by this point, and neither the fault of the Google car.
Ah, see, that's – okay, when you said that, I raised my eyebrows, but so neither one is the vehicle's fault, right?
Yeah, that's what we're hearing.
Okay.
I've seen a couple of sources, but I wasn't there.
So. Okay. So back to, are we divided on the issue, though? You're saying that, you know, there's no silver bullet. I also feel, I think we're exactly on the same page with this. I think there's no one system that's going to work for everybody.
They're just, the amount of money that it would take, money and planning, is enormous. That I don't know if it's affordable. It's certainly not affordable for the United States. Maybe for a smaller European country, you can afford the infrastructure needed to put everybody in a self-driving car.
You just said the word that I was going to get to right in the next sentence. Now, infrastructure. We talked about that in our early episode, you know, how driverless cars will work, number one, way back in 2008. And I'm sure we touched on it in 2009 with the Pikes Peak vehicle, the Audi. And when we got up to late last year, however, the Google car, which I'm having a hard time saying,
it's tricky.
That vehicle, it doesn't really require the infrastructure that all the other systems that we've seen up to that point require. This is a self-guided vehicle that can go anywhere, really. That has it's a massive contraption on the vehicle right now, an exterior thing. It's almost like a big exoskeleton on the vehicle. Actually, you know, they may have pared it down now, so it's just that top-mounted laser, the one that's like the main
system, main
right in the center of the hood, roof rather.
But it's still obviously not anything more than a prototype.
No, but the point is that, you know, it doesn't require something, you know, a specific roadway to be laid down, you know, that also has embedded sensors in it that work with the vehicle.
Well, that's true.
So that, you know, this vehicle can go anywhere, really, as long as it has a map of the area that it can navigate with, right?
In theory, let's also remember that this vehicle is in planning stages. One thing that I like that we did talk about with you're right, we have done quite a few autonomous vehicle podcasts, but one thing that I think we should punch again is that when we see the evolution of the autonomous vehicle, which is happening now, which is exciting, historians are going to look back on this. What we're going to see is exactly what's happening in CES 2013, which is that the features on luxury vehicles are starting to do more and more work that was traditionally the job of the people in the car.
Ben, are you reading my notes?
Yes.
Because it sure looks – I mean, you're just you're exactly hitting on what I'm going to talk about next, because I wanted to mention that this is like a I'm going to call it a slow creep. It's been creeping up on us from the beginning, you know, and that, you know, the rise of these technologies that seemingly really, really small things, you know, small steps become part of this bigger thing. So, and a lot of these companies are calling these building block technologies.
Right.
And that, you know, let's say that, and I've got a list here, like starting with adaptive cruise control. And then there was, you know, the self-parking systems and parallel parking systems. And then there's collision avoidance systems, lane assistance systems, blind spot detection systems. There's even like rear cross traffic alert systems now.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff, like once you start adding all this together, now if you had a vehicle with all of these together, that becomes a pretty smart car right there. Once you get, you know, you start adding even more to that, you know, like a vehicle that's going to be able to handle just driving in a straight line without smashing into anything, you know, on its own, and, you know, modulate the brake and accelerator, in a way that, you know, isn't aggressive towards other drivers or isn't, you know, annoying to other drivers.
That isn't dangerous.
See, these building block technologies are what you know, over the last decades, I guess, because adaptive cruise control has been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But building over the last, let's say, 15, 20 years, these things have really come a long way. And now they're starting to compile them all into one vehicle and one very, very smart vehicle that, you know, is capable of doing a lot more than we thought even 4 years ago.
Yeah. And I love that you say you point out one of the key breakthroughs here being successful integration of very disparate technologies, because originally, you know, a lot of this stuff came out as a gosh, isn't it neat kind of thing, you know, the automatic parallel parking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. It's a brilliant design.
Yeah, we even talked about that in a podcast on its own. What a cool system that was.
Oh, so this is our fifth
sort of.
But what we're starting to see, one of the things that makes this sort of a J curve of innovation is that these things, these individual pieces are being successfully combined into a larger thing. But if we can, before we go on, can we drill down into one of my favorite things, a little bit more detail about the Audi Connect?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What's so interesting about it?
You can use your phone, dude. You can send this car to go find a parking space on its own and then call it, and it will leave the parking space, again, on its own, and it will find you.
Okay, this is, you know what, this is the thing. I think you're saying that that's the Audi Connect. I think it's using the Audi Connect system.
Oh, you're right.
It's called, yeah. it's got a title.
It's got a specific.
Hang on one second. Let me find it. It's piloted parking.
So that's Audi. Right.
So if you want to search for it, no, Ben, that's a, but you're spot on in that this is maybe the coolest thing that I've seen in a long, long time. It's called Audi Piloted Parking. Mm. And it's ghost-like in the way that it works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really bizarre to watch this happen. And it's truly doing it. It's not a, you know, it's not a gimmick. It's not, you know, something that they're making up. Now, the downside of this, and I'm gonna point this out early on because, you know, we need to.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a couple things. I want to go back to them in just a second. But one of the downsides is this does have to have embedded sensors in the parking structure or parking area that the vehicle
is. This needs infrastructure, yeah.
It does need infrastructure other than, you know, and the vehicle that's also equipped. Mm-hmm. But let's get back to the positives of this, because this is that vehicle that I was talking about that is maybe one of the coolest things I've seen all year, really.
And we see a lot of I hate to use the name of the show, but we see a lot of stuff about cars.
Yeah.
One thing, just to clarify, Scott, your excellent point, Audi Connect is a larger system, and it does there are things that Audi Connect data services do that have nothing to do with pilot.
Yeah, it's the infotainment center for Audi.
Right. It's like your internet radio, you know, your GSM, you can do Bluetooth stuff with it. It's really cool.
It's your nav system. It's even got Wi-Fi, which is really cool. And that's how this whole thing operates, I believe.
Yeah, it's your wireless computer system, essentially.
But you're right. I mean, and for those that didn't quite pick it up in the first, you know, let's say that again, this again, what it does, because this is so cool. You can go to the mall and you can get out of the vehicle. Everybody can get out of the vehicle. The driver, the passengers, mm-hmm. everybody.
Grandma.
Anybody.
Whoever.
Yeah. The baby can get out in the stroller, whatever. You stand at the curb. You push the button on your smartphone, and the vehicle leaves and parks itself.
Yeah, without hitting anything,
it finds an open parking spot in the structure or in the parking lot, wherever it parks itself. And then what happens when you come back out?
You push a button on your cell phone, and your car says, "Oh, Scott and the family are ready. I better go get them."
And it starts up.
It starts itself.
Backs itself out. Drives up to the curb and picks you up. It's like, imagine it like, it's like autopilot parking is what it is, really. It's
yeah.
like valet-less valet parking, mm-hmm. really. I don't know how to better put it than that. I mean, it drops you off at the curb and it picks you up again all on its own. And it does shut off in between. It's not like it's running the whole time or anything
like that. Oh,
good point,
yeah.
But it's really, really advanced. It's a very sophisticated system that makes all this happen, mm-hmm. especially trying to find, I mean, it finds an open spot, Ben. I can't do that on my own in a parking spot, typically. and I would assume that it makes a good judgment call on, you know, if there's enough room on the, you know, the sides. Not that anybody has to get out, in or out of the vehicle, but, you know, you don't want to scraping along other vehicles.
So their CES demo was a success here because there was already some hype building up about this, but it met the hype. Again, the primary disadvantage is that it needs an external infrastructure.
Yeah, but they did demonstrate this live on a video. I mean, this happened in an interview. That, you know, the person that was there representing Audi mm-hmm. Actually had the vehicle, you know, go park itself and then come back and retrieve her during this interview. And you saw it do it. And, you know, they had obviously set up the area, you know, with the appropriate sensors. But the system functioned. It actually worked. And it's really cool to see it. So you can check out a video of it from, you know, the CES coverage.
And another thing that's cool about this specifically is that it uses production sensors, but it's prototype software. I think they mm-hmm. punched that. So these sensors are already in production. This is not so much a proof of concept as it is saying a declaration that we are going to do this.
Yeah. This is, you know, maybe coming to a mall near you. I mean, and that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a whole city that, you know, they have to outfit with this. You know, they can do it at, let's say our local mall here.
Uh-huh.
You know, they've got a mall with a parking structure. They can outfit, you know, the entire parking structure with this and then advertise that, you know, if you have a 2000, what, I don't know, you know, they're saying it's like a decade out on this thing. So,
yeah.
So, let's say that you have
let's just say 2020. How about
okay,
that?
You have a 20, a safe let's number. Say you have a 2020 Audi with that has this this piloted parking system. They can advertise that, you know, if you have piloted parking, you're set to go here at our mall. You know, for, you know, easy Christmas parking.
Mm-hmm.
How nice would that be?
And if it doesn't have, you know, here's the thing: if it doesn't have this technology by 2020, then somebody fired the wrong person. Nothing's getting done. This stuff, I'm going to go ahead and take a page from Jonathan Strickland's book, one of the co-hosts of Tech Stuff, and make a prediction here.
Okay.
This stuff is on the way. Maybe it's still a don't hold your breath situation. You know, if you're planning on buying a car in 2015 or something, it's not going to have this.
No.
It's probably just not going to happen.
No, because they are saying, I mean, they're saying a decade out.
Yeah.
Sometimes that gets bumped up, you know, if it's ready to go. Because you said they're production sensors.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle doesn't look like a test vehicle. It doesn't have, you know, a lot of external stuff on it.
It doesn't have that Google car laser.
No, this looks like a car that you would buy on the lot today.
Yeah, it's an A7, I think.
Yeah, it's a current vehicle outfitted with the system. So, you know, that. Mm-hmm. But they do say it's a decade out, so mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. Now, let's move on because really there were only this in a way it kind of surprised me, but maybe not. I mean,
yeah.
CES, they showcased really two vehicles. And now Audi was one.
Audi A7.
Now Toyota and Lexus, which mm-hmm. are, you know, Toyota's luxury brand is the Lexus brand.
Right.
But they were the only other ones that really had any kind of driverless car technology at CES. Not to say that they're not on the way because
mm-hmm.
Ford, BMW, GM, VW, Volvo, all those companies,
yeah.
they have driverless vehicles in the works. They're all working on something. The only ones that were really showcased at the latest CES 2013 were the Toyota and Audi brands. But the Toyota offering, I guess, the Lexus offering, we should say, because it was a Lexus vehicle.
Yeah, Lexus LS.
It's nearly identical to the Google car.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You know, everybody has their own wellness routine, their own approach to a healthy lifestyle. A lot of the most successful ones include herbs like ginger root, ashwagandha, and so many others. Nature's Way has been sourcing herbs like those for over 50 years. They understand that nature is the ultimate problem solver, so they're dedicated to providing plant-powered formulas to help people live healthier lives. Their herbs can support your health in so many ways. For instance, ginger root and slippery elm bark have both been used for centuries all over the world. Ginger root has traditionally been used to soothe occasional digestive upset and slippery elm bark to soothe the GI tract. St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support, which is something we can all use in our modern life. I mean, these herbs come from all over the world, but Nature's Way knows where the best ones grow. They test for potency in their state-of-the-art lab, and their scientists are experts in all things herbs. What's on the label is what's in your bottle, and what's in your bottle are the best herbs around. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.
Man, managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without painful fingersticks. So you can always know which way your glucose is headed. An arrow shows you where you're heading, up, down, or steady. It can also alert you before you go too low or when you're going too high. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM available, you can make better diabetes decisions about food, medication, and activity in the moment. And all those little decisions can lead to big results. Results you can see, like more time in range and lower A1C. With Dexcom G7, you can manage your diabetes with confidence. Get started with the number one recommended CGM brand by doctors and patients at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
And this kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, this was, it's safe to say, this was a surprise for a lot of people when they first heard about it. Now, of course, the news about this popped before CES 2013. Mm-hmm. People knew this was coming, but it was still amazing because this, the Advanced Active Safety Research Vehicle, right?
Okay. Yeah, AASRV.
Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue.
No.
But again, despite the name, this is great. This Toyota has been working on this sort of response to the Google vehicle at their, I'm going to butcher some Japanese, Scott. You ready?
Yeah.
At their Higashi Fuji Technical Center. That's in Toyota City, Japan. So this is their testing facility. This is like their Willy Wonka factory where they make all the crazy stuff. And so what they're showing at both at the technical center and at CES is a wealth of technologies, both vehicle to vehicle and vehicle to infrastructure.
Yeah, there's a few articles out there that will detail exactly, you know, the type of lasers that they use and the ranges that you know they detect objects, and you know, like the speeds that it's capable of, you know, of detecting objects at certain distances, and you know, all that information is out there. It's easy to find. But yeah, it's a very, very advanced vehicle. Now they showcased it on what was it, a production LS model.
Yeah.
Obviously this isn't something that's going to be, you know, on the lot anytime soon. And it's right there with Google vehicle in that, you know, it's still doing testing. They're getting licenses to do this kind of thing out in areas like Nevada. Mm-hmm. And you may think, you know, that's one thing I want to mention right now. You know, Audi was big news recently because they got a driverless car permit in Nevada. They were the only the second ones behind Google to do so.
Right.
And why did they select Nevada? And I thought, this is kind of strange, you know. And I, like a lot of people, when I think a lot of people think of Nevada, they think of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that place is crowded. Why would you want, you know, to do it there? Honestly, like, you go past Las Vegas, all of the rest of Nevada is wide open. I mean, it's completely wide open roads, easy test bed, you know, region for them. I think it's a good choice. And there's a couple of other states that, you know, they're still looking into. I think there's like three different states that are granting permits for stuff like this. I don't, there's somewhere in my notes here, but maybe I'll come across them.
Okay. I'm misremembering, but I think Utah is one.
Could be.
I'm not completely sure on that. But so here's one thing I really want to punch about this. The Advanced Safety Research Vehicle, or excuse me, the Advanced Active Safety Research Vehicle is right now is chilling out, chillaxing, if you will, at Ann Arbor, Michigan. As you said, Scott, we can see a lot of the stats about this vehicle online, and they do have a comparison. You can compare them. They're kind of apples to apples with Google's car.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, In a way. Now, you're saying apples to apples, and they use a similar system, but I also found that they want to stress that it's, and to clear up any confusion, that it's actually independent technology. Like the
they weren't snooping around Shoji and Larry.
Here's a quick way to dispel this is there's an article in the Wall Street Journal from early this year in 2013, and I'll just read this real quickly. It says while Google uses many Toyota vehicles in its autonomous fleet. Now that's where the confusion comes in because you know
they use a Toyota Prius.
Exactly, it's a Prius that you saw, so you might think like you know, they've just jumped on the bandwagon with this, right? Okay, so while Google uses many Toyota vehicles in its autonomous fleet, the two companies confirmed that Toyota's technology wasn't the result of a partnership and that each firm is developing different developing driving systems independently. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar to the Google car, you know, like with the laser system, the radar and camera equipment that they use. But it's not exactly the same.
Well, yeah, and it's tremendously important that we point that out because the reasons that they have similar concepts, independently generated similar concepts, is because these two companies are aiming for some of the same goals. Now, Toyota has a lot of information about their vision that's driving this. They're starting to ask, you know, being a Japanese country or company from Japan, they're starting to ask what is the long term, you know, 20, 50 years out state of the average city life? What is the average car going to be expected to do? How do we integrate these new technological breakthroughs in a way that the average driver is going to be able to profit from? And one big difference between Toyota right now and Google right now is that Toyota is very much taking pains to go the extra mile and to let people know that the job of this technology is safety related. It's not to wrench control away from the driver.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Google has more of a pure research driven idea.
Okay. Now I'm glad you're mentioning research and technology because this is where my little sidebar comes in here. Now I think we've talked about as much as we can about this because there's not a whole lot out there other than that they're doing it, right?
Yeah.
And that, you know, here's the basics of the system. We don't know all the details yet. You know, Ford Motor Company kind of chimed in with, you know, we're also working on something, you know, that, you know, but, and
totally
as is, you know, GM and Volvo and all the others that I mentioned. And by the way, I've got the three states that are, possibly going to legalize computer-controlled cars.
Oh, you picked them up?
Yeah, just real quick. They're Nevada, of course, yeah. Florida, and California.
I was totally wrong.
Well, I thought Utah was on there, too, just because of the wide-open spaces. But Florida, California, and Nevada.
Okay.
Okay, so back to technology and
research.
Research. Now, this was interesting to me, and I don't know how I miss some things in the news sometimes when this happens. There's a lot going on in the auto industry all the time, so I try to keep up on this stuff. But there is a partnership right now between Toyota and Tesla that's going on that I had no idea, and I don't know why this evaded me for some reason. I don't know where this somehow missed me.
So it's ongoing, though.
Yeah, it's ongoing. But and do you know a little bit about this, or just maybe that it happened?
All I know that it happened.
Okay, so the idea is that, you know, Toyota is kind of they've got this new, relatively new chief executive officer who's the grandson of the company's founder,
right?
And he's really focused on new technology, and that's where a lot of this hybrid technology and all this comes in, and batteries and. That's where, you know, of course, Tesla being this kind of upstart company that's all about batteries and alternative power and all this stuff. That's
first,
where this
high-performance electric car.
This really gets interesting, and I started to kind of dig into this just a tiny little bit. And you know, since we're done with the CES electric vehicles, right? Let me just mention this real quickly because I found some just kind of a twist to this, you know, that Tesla, you know, it's kind of had its ups and downs, right?
Sure. Rocky road at times.
A bit, but for the most part, it's remained a strong company. You know, I know there's been some bad news about, you know, some battery situations, you know, like breaking and things like that happened in the Tesla Roadster. But, you know, I think they've overcome all that and they've got some decent models coming out. In fact, there's one that I want to mention here that's a real surprise. But there's a Forbes article called Why is Tesla beating GM, Ford, and Toyota electric cars? Okay,
that's, oh, that's the title. Yeah.
So why is Tesla beating GM, Ford, and Toyota? Now, the crazy thing about this is, and it makes great points. It's a short article, mm-hmm. very concise. They make a lot of good points in that, you know, back in 2009, I think it was, Bob Lutz. Specifically, they point out Bob Lutz at GM.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, not cool in this case because he was kind of laughing at Tesla. He was saying, like, you know, who do they think they are coming in here thinking that they can, you know, sell a car like this for that kind of price?
Yeah.
No one's going to buy it. It's not, you know, something that the people want.
Oh, I didn't know.
And so he's laughing at Tesla Motors. Well, at the same time, they point out GM shut down Pontiac, Hummer, Saab, Saturn. And at the same time, Tesla sold 100% of its inventory, and they opened up a second dealership because at the time they were a single dealership operation, you know, one main office.
Yeah.
So you know, it's kind of like a ha ha thing on their part, you know, like, well, we'll show you. The idea is that Tesla is they're what they call a classic example of a disruptive innovator.
Absolutely. Okay? Yeah.
So they've come in and they've disrupted the norm. The situation that's, you know, like the standard operating procedure for automobile companies from the beginning of the automobile.
Yeah.
Really. And they do things completely different. And that's why, you know, they were kind of laughed at early on, but now people are starting to take notice. And they made this comparison. I thought this was interesting. Well, I'll almost done, I promise.
No, I'm listening.
They said that Tesla is, this Forbes article again,
yeah.
Says that Tesla is completely changing the automotive market. Now, I would never ever think of Tesla completely changing the automotive market. I see it as like a luxury vehicle that's, you know, like a sports vehicle, almost like a boutique vehicle. You
There's
know?
A niche, you're
saying. Yeah, very, very limited niche, right? Well, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that they're coming on pretty strong here.
Okay, but they say of this partnership?
Well, they say that they're, well, it's, you know, working with them, it can't hurt. Right,
yeah.
It can't hurt, and it can't hurt Toyota to work with Tesla either. I mean, I think that there's something to be learned both ways there. But they're saying they're changing the market a lot, like Amazon changed the retail industry.
Ooh,
in
okay.
that, you know, the retailer said, "Well, why would you ever go to Amazon to, you know, get the same product that you can come right down the street, you know, to my my brick and mortar store and buy the same thing? Why would you ever do that?
Because you can save $3 if you wait a week."
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, like, that's the exact thing that you know Tesla is doing to the automotive market. There's like this new way to run the business, and then there's the old standard way, and you know they're realizing that maybe this new way is really catching on, and so much so, in fact, Ben. You know, I said that, you know, that this is kind of like a boutique vehicle and, you know, it's definitely a niche market, right?
The Roadster.
Well, yeah, that's the way a lot of people think about it, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, do you know what the Motor Trend Car of the Year in 2013 is? It's a Tesla model.
Is it a Tesla?
It is. It's
not a Roadster.
No, it's not. It's a Tesla Model S because they quit making the Roadster, right?
Yeah.
They make this Tesla Model S. Now, the base price is kind of high, $59.9, but to make the Motor Trend Car of the Year in 2013 after mm-hmm. in just 2009 being laughed at as, you know, this upstart that's never going to make it.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing. I this whole thing, like that article, it was just full of little bits of information that led me elsewhere to, you know, to read and research. And I tell you, they're coming on real strong.
Sounds like it might be time for a Tesla podcast.
Maybe. But, you know, this whole thing with Toyota, mm-hmm. it happened. I don't know if it happened last year or when it happened. Again, just kind of right off my radar. I didn't even know it happened, but it makes complete sense now that you think about the direction both companies are going.
And, you know, it sounds like they've changed your mind a little bit. Tesla has gotten a little bit more street cred with you. Huh?
I think they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't hurt that, you know, they also have vehicles on the lot at the Lamborghini dealer that I like to go and, you know, press my nose against the glass occasionally.
One day, we're going to have to tell the folks at that dealership that you have a car show.
I'm going to owe them a bottle of Windex because, you know, there's after every weekend, there's always a nose print and, you know, like two hands up on the glass. Lamborghini and Lotus, it's a great combination. And then, you know, they add Tesla to the mix and there's sometimes a spiker in there.
Really?
It's really cool. It's a neat place.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You know, everybody has their own wellness routine, their own approach to a healthy lifestyle. A lot of the most successful ones include herbs like ginger root, ashwagandha, and so many others. Nature's Way has been sourcing herbs like those for over 50 years. They understand that nature is the ultimate problem solver, so they're dedicated to providing plant-powered formulas to help people live healthier lives. Their herbs can support your health in so many ways. For instance, ginger root and slippery elm bark have both been used for centuries all over the world. Ginger root has traditionally been used to soothe occasional digestive upset and slippery elm bark to soothe the GI tract. St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support, which is something we can all use in our modern life. I mean, these herbs come from all over the world, but Nature's Way knows where the best ones grow. They test for potency in their state-of-the-art lab, and their scientists are experts in all things herbs. What's on the label is what's in your bottle, and what's in your bottle are the best herbs around. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without painful fingersticks. So you can always know which way your glucose is headed. An arrow shows you where you're heading, up, down, or steady. It can also alert you before you go too low or when you're going too high. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM available, you can make better diabetes decisions about food, medication, and activity in the moment. And all those little decisions can lead to big results. Results you can see, like more time in range and lower A1C. With Dexcom G7, you can manage your diabetes with confidence. Get started with the number one recommended CGM brand by doctors and patients at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
So you already responded to this guy, Richard, out in California.
Okay.
Richard had a story that I wanted to make sure the rest of our listeners hear, just because I think it's super cool. All right. Thanks for the Rolls Royce podcast, he said. It brought back some good memories. I drove a 1936 Rolls Royce to my senior prom.
Ah, now I remember this guy. Yeah. This is really cool.
This is a cool story.
Wait, a 1936 Rolls Royce.
To his senior prom.
Okay.
And his senior prom was not in 1936.
Yeah, he's not 120.
So Richard says, there was a company in Tucson, Arizona that had antique cars to promote their business. At 18 years old, I went to the company office and told the manager that somebody said it would be funny if we drove a Rolls Royce to senior prom. He said, I don't think it's funny. Do you want to, you want a Rolls or Pierce Arrow? I didn't know what a Pierce Arrow was.
Oh my gosh.
So I asked for the Rolls Royce. The only thing he was concerned about was if I was insured. So I called my parents' agent who told me I was insured for anything I drive. That's all the manager needed and my word I could take care of the car. Well, I went to pick up the car. He just asked me to park it in front because the flying lady hood ornament was the least expensive thing on the car, and it was $50. The Rolls was right-hand steering. The problem I had with that is when I placed myself where I usually do on the road, my date was in the lane with the oncoming traffic. Recently, I told some coworkers this story. One of the women asked if the car was new when I drove it. I wish I had 100 more pictures.
Har, har, har. Was it new when you drove it? Yeah, I'm sure she had a good laugh over that too, right? Because he would be, how old would he be? 120, something like that. I didn't figure it out exactly.
But you wrote back to this guy.
Yeah, I did. I sent it back a long letter. But he sent a photo along with that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the classic looking Rolls, the huge fenders and the headlights that look like they're as big as this table that we're sitting at.
Yeah. Granted, though, this is kind of a small table.
Oh, yeah. But they're massive headlights. It's just a really, really neat, neat vehicle. And I think he mentioned in there he wished – later he actually wrote back a second time and said – I just wish that I had taken about 100 photographs that day because he's got just the one photo that's got a lot of patina to it. It's really, really a neat photo.
Yeah.
But it doesn't show a whole lot of detail. And I'm sure that the memory of that day is just etched in his mind because what a cool experience.
I mean, that's Ferris Bueller level cool to have a 1936 Rolls at your senior prom. Are you kidding?
What I thought was maybe the coolest thing is that he's driving it himself. It's not like a chauffeured vehicle where he just steps out. You know, they let you out. I mean, which would still be cool. But
to
drive that vehicle and arrive in that is really, really neat.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for writing to us. We hope that you still get a chance to mess with that Rolls. Maybe let us know what's going on with that business. And also to our listeners, we hope that you enjoyed this story. We hope you enjoyed our little update on self-driving cars, our fifth episode. I promise, Scott, I'll get off of it now.
Officially fourth, but I think along the way we've had some of the building block technology episodes that count maybe as driverless technologies.
Okay, we'll call it 4*.
Yeah, that's right. That's
all right. So thank you guys so much for listening. We want to hear what you think about the future of cars. Would you be comfortable riding in a self-driving car? And what's the coolest car you've ever driven? Those are good questions.
Why not?
So drop us a line at Facebook, give us a holler on Twitter, or send us an email directly, just like Richard did. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids. No plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.